May 6th, excuse me, come off by one day. And let's move to the pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, so we are in a special meeting to have a panel question our executive director candidates. And where is Abby?
Right here.
There she is. Abby, do you want to talk a little bit about what the quorum is before we get started? Hi, David.
Okay, so thank you. I just wanted to welcome the candidates to Port Townsend. This is a really exciting time, and we really appreciate your willingness to partake in this, you know, open forum as part of the selection process. It's really important to the community and to the port. Also want to thank the panelists for coming forward and be willing to participate on kind of short notice. Your opinions are valued as well as your time, and so we appreciate the short notice showing up for us, and also the audience for coming this morning. You're all interested in the welfare of the port, and your being here is important to us. Just want to make a reminder, the panelists were unanimously chosen by the commission for the forum in an effort to have public concerns asked of the candidates while allowing the commission and the audience to witness their responses in an organized format. Just want to go over the rules real quickly. There is a handout that goes over this, but just want to remind everybody the way it's going to be structured. Each candidate will have 10 minutes to do a presentation, just kind of say who they are, why they're here, and what they bring to this position. After those, they each get their 10 minutes, then we'll proceed with question one across the board. Each panelist will have 1 minute to ask their question, and then we'll cycle through the candidates in response. Each candidate will have 3 minutes to respond, and I'll try to keep everybody on task with the time, because 10 questions and the 4 minutes each, it ends up being a long time. And then also, because sometimes there's an advantage to the order in which you get to answer a question, we're going to rotate the way that they answer. And I'll make sure we stay on task with that. Basically, it'll be Josh, and then Sam and Greg, and then the next one will be Sam, and then Greg, and then Josh, and on as it goes. We'll take a break about midway, about 10:15. And just want to also mention about the microphones. Those are really to make sure we have a high-quality recording of this. Thank you, Bill Putney, for setting that up and bringing those for us. So it doesn't amplify the voice. So please make sure you speak loudly and clearly when you're asking the questions and answering. And just to conclude, just remind you, just try to stay, you know, within your time as much as possible, because if we do stay on task, it'll be about 2.5 hours. So if I have to interrupt you, I'll just ask you to kind of wrap it up. And if there's no questions, we'll start with Josh.
Okay, good morning.
You want to come up here?
Sure.
Thanks.
Yeah, please.
I just want to acknowledge Abigail Berg. She put this together. Both Abigail and Sue Nelson have been working pretty much tirelessly, and Abigail has kind of shepherded the entire process of the executive director selection for Port of Townsend. So she's done a great job, and with that, we'll get started.
Great. Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you. I'm honored to be a finalist. It's been wonderful this week to receive the feedback I've gotten from the community since our names hit the paper. I even had someone say that he was ecstatic that I was a finalist. Now, I haven't achieved that particular emotion yet, but it's probably because we're still in the process. So ask me next week how I feel about it. But I'm also honored to be with the other finalists. I've known Sam for years. I have a great deal of respect and admiration for her. Just met Greg this morning, but obviously he's a strong candidate as well. So the good news is that I think the port, no matter who they pick, it's gonna be a positive thing for the community. So, but now's the time for me to tell you why I think I should be the port director. I feel like every step in my life, both professionally and just my life experience, has really led me to this point. Let me explain. So I'm a coastal guy. I was born in Redondo Beach, California. There's a great pier there, but actually I grew up in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, so I've been surrounded by maritime heritage forever, essentially. And my middle school was the Wixon Clippers, and so the emblem was a clipper ship, and that's because they built clipper ships down at the Sisuit Harbor in Dennis, Massachusetts. And of course, the emblem here for the Port of Port Townsend is pretty similar, so I think there's some synchronicity there. I have a public service orientation, so once I finished school in Vermont, my undergrad, I first discovered Port Townsend actually in the early 1990s, and then I went off to serve in the Peace Corps in Honduras. And then when I got back, I went to graduate school in Oregon to study community and regional planning. And basically, I'm trained and educated as a community planner. So that means that, public involvement and helping the community develop a vision and then taking steps to achieve that outcome together is what we do. I'm a generalist by training. So planners are kind of like jacks of all trades. And I think that's really important for this kind of port role because there's just such a wide variety of things that the port director has to do. And so no one's going to be an expert in every single particular avenue. But it's important as a leader to be able to understand all the various components and be able to put the pieces together and help the community get to where you want to go. See the big picture. Gather information. Create choices. Plan and solve problems together. So as I mentioned, I discovered Port Townsend in the 90s. When I got back from Peace Corps, I served on the schooner Adventurous as an educator deckhand and really got to learn both the port here and the community as a whole and just decided I absolutely loved it. And so when I finished school in Oregon, I saw that there was a job available with Jefferson County Department of Community Development. And so I took that job in the year of 2000. And I first started doing development review, specializing in shoreline management, of course, apropos to the port, and then went into long-range planning and became the lead planner for responsibility for the comprehensive plan, for example. Yes?
3 minutes.
3 minutes, okay. And the development regulations, working with the Planning Commission, working with the did you mean, so 3 minutes left or 3 minutes?
I'm sorry, 10 minutes. I'm sorry, you have 10 minutes.
Okay.
Is that 3 minutes left or is the
no, answer? You just hit 3 minutes and I was thinking.
Perfect,
about
7 minutes left. Excellent.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like, okay. I was told to speak slowly, so that's gonna be a problem here with the rest.
Testing you under stress.
All right. So, working in a planning shop in a small planning office like this one, of course we have a large county, but it's relatively small, one city, not as quite as complicated as other places, of course. So it's a small staff, and you have to be able to learn how to deal with just a wide variety of issues. So I studied environmental planning, and that's where I started. But soon I was taking on other types of things. Again, as I mentioned, lead staff to the Planning Commission and bringing recommendations to the 3-member Board of County Commissioners, which is very similar to a port commission. So I have experience in that milieu. And quickly I found getting involved in other aspects of planning, such as economic development. I wrote the initial code for major industrial development for the community. I did the stormwater ordinance, for example. I got some grant money from the state to set up the Land Use Planning and Economic Development Advisory Panel, or LUPADAP. And the LUPADAP was composed of, I like acronyms, so and making them up, too. So the LUPADAP was composed of stakeholders in the community, business interests, etc. We had just adopted our Unified Development Code, so it was an opportunity to really identify obstacles for growth in that code and then make appropriate adjustments to make sure that we were doing everything we could to retain businesses and also create new opportunities. Then I wanted to get into building things. So I transferred over to the Department of Public Works, where I became the principal transportation planner. I wanted to learn more about capital planning, so I was responsible for the rolling 6-year transportation improvement program, which is just that. Also the annual construction program, which is a budget document to say how we're going to spend our money on our priorities that we determined in a public process. And I learned everything about project management, from getting the money to obligating the funds to doing the consultant selection process to overseeing the design and engineering, handing it off to a professional engineer, and then circling back to close out the grant to make sure that we crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's, counted for every dollar, so that Jefferson County would retain its ability to use gas tax and grant funding. So that was a wonderful experience. Also got to bring in outside money, so that's also an important thing for the port, to be able to do that, because you can't fund everything yourself. So brought in, I was helped bring in lots of state and federal funds for various projects, overlaid Center Road, arguably our most important road, you know, outside of the state highways that Jefferson County deals with, trails money, the Safe Routes to School project that's just completed in Chimicum, very proud about that. You know, the actual construction happened after I left, but I was part of the team to get the money. Same thing with a Complete Streets project in Quilcene, which is a safety-oriented project that's underway right now, as Linda knows very well. So as well as the biggest fish I guess we caught at the time was trying to keep the Upper Hoh Road open. Again, an economic development issue, because we want to make sure that people have access to the Hoh Rainforest. So huge problem, major river system, big washouts, culverts in need of replacement, and we brought in over $11 million for that. And the reason why we were successful is because we had federal partners, state partners, cities, City of Forks, tribe, non-governmental organizations, et cetera, to be able to get that done. Then I went to King County, Department of Transportation, Road Services Division, bigger operation. I wanted to see how things worked over there in a county with 39 cities instead of just one. The big challenge there was a major shift in funding. As cities grow in King County, there's less money available for the county government to spend on unincorporated areas. So, but they still have a big road system. So how did they do that? Major downsizing. And instead of focusing on building new things, capital planning, they focus on asset management. How do we deal with dwindling revenue, except we have all these assets that are in need of repair and replacement? Sounds familiar, because that's what the port is going through right now. So that was a wonderful experience, but I decided, you know, I'm a peninsula guy at heart, so when I saw that there was a job opening in Chimicum with the State Department of Natural Resources, I went for that. It's Aquatic Resources Division, go back to my roots in a sense, dealing with the aquatic environment. And so I'm a district manager, I have a team of land managers and support staff, and we manage a good chunk of the 2.6 million acres of state-owned aquatic land in Washington on behalf of the people. We have over 700 active contracts for leases, easements, rights of entry for people to use state-owned aquatic lands. So we're involved in managing those tenants, just like you would do it here at the port for economic development purposes, people doing aquaculture or other kinds of uses that bring in revenue to the state of Washington. So again, perfect training ground for this port job in my estimation. So finally, I know a lot about Jefferson County. I know about this port. This is the place I live. This is the place I care about. But I'm also familiar with statewide issues. I'm the vice president of the Washington chapter of the American Planning Association, and I served as 10 years as the legislative co-chair for APA Washington. So I'm familiar with what's going on in Olympia, how does it affect local communities and local governments. So I think that's also important when you're a port director, to have your eye on what's going on in the big picture. So back finally, why do I want this job? You know, people have asked me, you know, why do you want that job? Because everybody hates the port director. Well, first of all, I hope that truism is not actually true. But it is true that you can't please everybody. So in this job, you're going to have to disappoint somebody sometime. In fact, every decision you make is bound to disappoint somebody. There's a lot of competing interests here. But what I can say is that, you know, as a professional and as a leader, you can treat people fairly and with respect. You can be honest and forthright. You can be interested, truly interested, in people's concerns and ideas, whether they be staff or customers or the public. And you can bring inspiration and information and analysis to a public process, get people involved, present quality, creative choices for the elected officials to make, and then once those decisions are made, faithfully execute them and implement them. So that's what I believe that I have experience doing and I can do as a leader. The port is in a unique position just to help preserve our maritime culture, provide access to the water, to the air, and basically the central mission of economic development, to make sure that we have jobs, we keep our jobs and we have new jobs, and we move with and change with the times and take advantage of all the opportunities that we have as a port, working with partners. Finally, the port turns 100 years old in the year 2024. I would love to be here as the director to help celebrate that milestone, as well as ideally be the director when I retire in about 20 years and leave the port in fantastic shape for the next leader. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning. First of all, I'd like to thank the commission for inviting us all here for this public forum. I'd like to thank the panel and the public for not only your time this morning, but also your continued interest in the port and the community at large. And I'd like to thank the other candidates. So it's a little awkward, these kind of situations, but Josh and I talked yesterday. We have known each other for years, just met Greg this morning, and I consider myself flattered to be amongst such a slate of qualified candidates. So how do you sum up a career in less than 10 minutes, and why I think that I'm a good fit for the port director? So I'll start with the basics first. I'm a civil engineer, have my degree from San Diego State, and I also have a master's degree in public administration from the University of Washington Evans School of Public Affairs. My first job from out of college was at with the U.S. Air Force at Eielson Air Force Base near North Pole, Alaska. So you might be thinking to yourself, San Diego to the North Pole, that's kind of jump. But it's actually for me and my time in college, I had a motto, never let college stand in the way of your education. And I did quite a bit of world travel, and so it wasn't really a big leap for me because I was very intent on getting to know the world and getting to know a lot of different communities. So I'm actually a member of the Circumnavigators Club, which is a group that have people who actually circumnavigated the globe. So I went to Alaska and was a civilian employee of the Air Force and started as an environmental/civil engineer, and within 2 years became the project manager for the installation restoration program. That meant that I supervised a section of civilian employees and had an annual budget of over $10 million. During my time there, I got to do a lot of unusual engineering in the subarctic. I can tell you that materials and equipment and things behave very differently when it's 60 below zero. And so I learned quite a bit as a young engineer. I also got to write the first record of decision for a Superfund site in the state of Alaska, which obtained signature with the Pentagon, the EPA, and the state of Alaska. I then came to know a little place called the Egg and I Road, and moved down here, moved to Jefferson County. I had friends in the area, and as so many of people that have lived here or moved here, kind of had to piece my career together. You know, it sometimes can be difficult making a living out here, and I've known that myself, but had great opportunities. I worked for both the WSU Cooperative Extension as a watershed and a groundwater educator. I worked for the City of Port Townsend for about 5 years, and I also worked for Jefferson Land Trust as a project manager. In 2000, I founded my own consulting company called ISE Consultants. And it stands for I Speak Engineering. And there I provided services, consultant services, to a variety of nonprofit and government agencies, including project management, funding strategies, permitting, communication strategies, strategic planning. Kind of one of the things you get to do as a consultant, particularly in a consultant in a community like this, is you really get to broaden your skill set and provide a lot of different services to different people. And I think that's a hallmark of my career. I have a very broad base of skills, and I've deliberately set out to do that. In 2013, about 3.5 years ago, my family and I took the opportunity to move across the water to the San Juan Islands. And there I began my work with San Juan County in the Public Works Department. And within 10 months, I started as a solid waste administrator. Within 10 months, I became tapped to become the Director of Community Development. I was there for over 2 years. In my time there, I remodeled the office completely with an orientation towards better customer service. Took the staff through a lean training and implementation. We were able to cut our permit issuance time by a third. And I also oversaw the natural resource programs. About 6 months ago, I participated with the county manager, and we did a organizational redesign and created a new division of environmental resources. So I went back to Public Works. I'm now Director of Environmental Resources and the Deputy Director of Public Works. The Director of Environmental Resources, I have both the stormwater utility as well as the solid waste utility with me. We oversee operations throughout the served islands, which Can I tell you, reminiscent of my time in Alaska, it's kind of challenging to do business sometimes in the islands and to move things around. And so oversee those two programs, including with the stormwater utility. We have a very ambitious capital improvement program of over $16 million of projects in the next 5 years. I oversee the natural resource programs, including the Marine Resources Committee, Salmon Recovery, Puget Sound Protection and Recovery, Shoreline Stewardship, Derelict Vessels, and as well as I serve directly as the advisor to the County Council on Marine Policy, including trying to be responsive to the risk associated with the incredible increase in marine vessel traffic throughout our waters, which of course Jefferson County faces as well. So that's kind of the basics. And as Josh said, why do I think that that's I'm a good fit for this port director? And I think that, you know, really I term my career as being a place-based career. I've always chosen to where I wanted to live out of a love for where I wanted to live, and then built my career around that. And I think that is really aligned with so many people here in this room, as well as people who live here in Jefferson County. You have to want to be here, and you have to be creative to be here. And I think that the port director needs to be creative as well. He needs to be able to work with a wide variety of people and interest groups. After spending so much time in my project development and project management, I really turned my focus to kind of going upstream and thinking, okay, how do I not just get projects done, but how do I actually work to create value for my clients, for the community, and to help build community resiliency. I then turned with my master's degree and my private practice then to focusing on things like strategic planning. I've done strategic plans for NOAA, local and regional land trust, and the food co-op here. I was the board president of the food co-op, and the food co-op, as you know, is one of the county's largest employers with annual revenues of over $14 million. So really able to focus that organization to work with the board from that side of the table. I have also turned my attention to economic development. I worked with doing pro forma and business plans for Mount Townsend Creamery. I've worked with the USDA and Jefferson Land Trust in really looking at forestry and the future of forestry in this county. And for many of you know, that's a huge portion of our economy. As both a civil engineer and where I work now, you know, I have just a really deep experience in capital improvement projects and really looking at it from a strategic point of view. And the thing that is interesting from living in a county made and comprised entirely of islands is that the marine transportation facilities are an integral portion of our transportation. We have docks and floats, and we were able to work with the County Roads, a group of engineers, to get them to recognize that mooring buoys are actually a portion of our transportation system and to be able to use funding on that. We also look at road ends and access to the water, and really to work with not only the number of property owners throughout the islands. We have over 400 miles of shoreline. It's the largest amount of shoreline in any county in the contiguous United States. And so we have a lot of interest there, and it is a continual effort to be able to work with the public so that they can understand what the requirements are, but really how they best manage their own piece of the shoreline, and then how we provide services to them. So as I look back on my career, I look to the port strategic plan, and I look at the values that are expressed there. And I see, you know, community access to facilities and the water and the air. I see sustainable economic development, community partnerships. And I look at these values and I go, these are the values that I not only personally believe in, but I have acted on throughout my entire career. It would be an honor to be able to return to this community. I lived here for over 20 years before I went to the San Juan Islands. I think that I have already a well-established network, both at the local level, at the state level, the federal, and I've done quite a bit of work with the tribal nations. So I thank you very much for the opportunity to come and speak with you. Look forward to more questions. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Greg Englund. I appreciate the opportunity to apply for the executive director role. My background is quite a bit different. I mean, I came from Minnesota. I was going to school at University of Wisconsin, and when I got out of school where I grew up, there just weren't any jobs. And a guy had an idea to come out and commercially fish in order to put us through school. So I came out to Seattle and walked the docks until I found a job. Once I went to sea, I really loved it. I love being at sea. I still do. I fished for about 9 years. I started off trolling. In fact, I fished around these guys. Some of the trollers are still here, as well as Persane around the North Sound. Some other vessels are in the that right now are being serviced over here. I see the Harbor Gem and a couple other vessels. So I fished in just about every fishery. I was going to buy a boat and a permit. That was really my intent. And they just kept getting further and further away from me the harder I ran at it. And then I met my wife, and that pretty much brought that to an end. I fished for about 3 more months, and then I came back and I was offered a job shoreside with American Seafoods. I managed factory trawlers during their startup days. I've been on just about every class of vessel. I've worked with every class of vessel. I worked in private sector for quite a number of years, and then I was traveling globally and working all over, and I was gone all the time. And we had two little, a toddler and a baby, and a job came open at the Port of Seattle. And I was looking for a transition. I'd been in a startup company, small marine technology company, and we ran out of cash. And so anyway, I applied for this role. I didn't think I would actually get it or get consideration. But what they needed at that time is similar to what you guys need at this time. And that is, you need someone that can come in and help generate business. A rising tide raises all vessels. And I think really that's where we're at this time. You need really an infusion of revenue. And no matter where it comes from, it's going to have to come from any number of different places, whether it be grant money, like Josh referred to, or whether it may be put out to the whole public, and you have to vote it in if you want a tax. But I think that we need to really look out to the private sector and to other areas where we can generate a lot of revenue and basically get more monetize the value that you have here at the Port of Port Townsend. Fundamentally, that's what you're going to have to, I really think that's what you're going to have to go do. You can look at cutting costs, but you have like a huge capital development program. And, you know, if you had $16.5 million, that actually doesn't include everything. So the reality is, I think we're going to have to bring in a lot of revenue. And we're going to have to come up with ways to do that. When I worked at the Port of Seattle, I started off and they hired me for business development. And I cut across the whole portfolio of all seaport assets. We looked at many hundreds of opportunities, and some of those come to fruition. So I have a pretty good feel. I had a great track record. The only thing that I was being judged on when I first was hired at the port was I had to bring in $800,000 of net operating income annually. That's it. And we exceeded those levels easily. Then at a certain point, then I did that for about 5 years. I handled the whole real estate portfolio as people retired. And then I transitioned over. They had a big problem over on the Outer Harbor. They had couple people, one person, they retired, another person passed away, and they needed somebody that had the skill set to be able to handle with everything over at the terminal, including working with every kind of stakeholder group. So the terminal is about 200-acre terminal, but I handled the whole Outer Harbor and going up to Duwamish. So anything that wasn't managed by a terminal operator, like a container terminal, then that was under my purview. When I took it over, we were basically losing a lot of money. We were down about $2.5 million. We had the cruise business that was really actually just starting up, and they were putting in they're shifting the cruise terminal over to Terminal 91, so that displaced all the tug and barge business, which was about $700,000 in revenue. And so we had to make up all that revenue in our P&L, and so we built about $3 million, and we did it with very few people, and we did everything from soup to nuts. So everything in this role, with the ED role, I've done it. So I feel very comfortable. We moved over to Bainbridge, over the peninsula. Actually, I moved to Tracyton, then Paulsbow, and then eventually when I was working in Seattle, we moved to Bainbridge just across the Agapas Bridge, is where I live now, about 20 years ago. I came out in 1981. I've been in the maritime business for 35 years. I worked in real estate, transportation, logistics, and obviously all the maritime sectors, and energy. That's kind of my background. So I think that at this time, for what the Port of Port Townsend needs, I think that I would be a very good candidate. I'm not contentious. I bring people together. You're all here because you all have a common cause. You have to stay focused on that. You have to eliminate any infighting. You can disagree, but I think you have to move the ball forward, and I've been able to do that. Thank you.
Okay, so David, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So I'll start the questions. Let's see, I'm near the end of a 30-year career on our working waterfront, so that's my first question. We'd like to see more families moving into our community, boat school graduates, tradespeople, mathematicians, business owners, engineers, welders, carpenters, and painters working side by side to create and invent our landscape. We feel proud of this community and the level of craftsmanship we've helped to create, but we're unsure of our future, particularly with the requirements for revenue generation that were just mentioned. Given the economic and environmental challenges the port is facing today and will be facing in the future, what steps will you take to enhance and secure the economic outlook of this place? Will the boatyard permit be in place 10 years from now, 20 years from now? Can somebody else come like I did 30 years ago and with everything I own in the back of a pickup truck and raise a family and send a kid to school? That's my question.
Wow.
You have 3 minutes.
Thanks, David. Well, first of all, as mentioned, you know, the primary mission of the port is economic development. So the first thing we should do is take stock of what we have now, which really is incredible. So, you know, we're not the Port of Seattle, we're not the Port of Tacoma, but we're also not the Port of Dorado. I mean, we're kind of in the middle there. This boatyard, shipyard here supports over 400 jobs. There are a lot of creative people here and a lot of success to celebrate. And it is very Port Townsend, you know, which is very important. So whatever we do, we want to make sure not to jeopardize that, not to change into something that we're not. So retaining business, making sure we keep that boatyard permit. I know that there are some considerations right now. Department of Ecology is considering issuing an administrative order, which may set our priorities for us, at least in the short term, to make sure that we solve those problems and do not jeopardize what we have right now, never mind trying to grow. Once the immediate problems are handled, the adoption of the draft capital repair and replacement plan, the next budget to try to solve some of those immediate issues that are priorities in that plan, dealing with the boatyard permit, dealing with the breakwater at Point Hudson, dealing with the airport overlay. These are like the immediate issues. We have a comprehensive scheme that was updated in 2013. We have the strategic plan that Sam mentioned that was done in 2010, which some of the policies were adopted into the 2013 scheme. So those are the immediate things. Meanwhile, though, the port is in a unique position to work with other partners. The port can't do it alone, of course. You've got the Chamber of Commerce, you've got the EDC, et cetera, and you got private business. So trying to create those partnerships so that you can maximize the value of those public assets that you have and take advantage of all the breadth of power that is given to port districts in Washington State through statute, industrial development districts, other kinds of funding sources. You can start a export company, a port can do that. So things that private business either may not be willing to do or it doesn't make sense for them to do it alone, but the port could be the one to help fuse all those interests together. We've got a thriving, for example, agricultural sector right now doing amazing things. What if the port were able to cooperate with those folks and set up some kind of facility that everybody could use, whether it be food processing or some kind of export opportunity there? So essentially, it's a combination of taking care of what we have, which is first and foremost, and not to backslide, if you will, but secondly, to continually look forward to new opportunities. So I think that I mentioned 2024 as the centennial celebration, in a sense. I think that's a good timing to update the comprehensive scheme, which is what it's called in the statute, and to do a robust planning process that would lead us towards that, while we're concurrently taking care of all the immediate troubles. So that is going to be a process that is going to incorporate all kinds of interest groups together to figure out our best tactics going forward. Thank you.
Okay,
That is an excellent question, David. And, you know, I was out walking around down the trail and through the boatyard yesterday and saw some, from my point of view, remarkably young people out there. And it was very exciting to see them and that they're beginning their career. And, you know, I thought to myself, why are they drawn here? What has brought them here? And I think it is that, you know, we have developed a brand, if you will, and it's really kind of the ethic of our community, and that is of craft and of artisanship and of being a very place-based economy. And so I think that, you know, the port's role needs to recognize that as well and bring its powers to bear. Port districts were created in essence definitely to support economic development, but to provide the infrastructure so that transportation and commerce can happen. And it's in that development of infrastructure that I think my real strengths lie. You mentioned the stormwater permit, and I think that is absolutely one of the most pressing things at hand. And I have over 25 years in stormwater permitting, project design, and project development. I also have a lot of years in working with the regulators and providing the same level of customer service to them that I do to other stakeholders. And that is one of the things that I really try to infuse my staff with, of that when you work with the regulatory community, that they have a job to do and you need to work with them in a cooperative fashion. Can we keep the boatyard permit in place? Absolutely we can. You know, it's going to take some creative planning. I think I already have some ideas. I've worked on a variety of stormwater projects, including natural systems. I helped develop the natural system approach for City of Port Townsend. I've developed it for Mason County. I worked on some things in Grays Harbor County. So there are some really cost-effective things that we can do. But we absolutely, I believe, the job of the port is to work at providing that infrastructure and then work on the partnerships in the community. What will bring young families here? It's everything from making sure that we have an affordable housing stock to that we have really attractive schools. I think that, you know, we all know that David Engel is retiring, and that's a a sad moment, but I think he has really left the school district in a fantastic place and really partnered with the maritime industry here. And so it's bringing these partners together and making sure that we can not just conceptualize things, but actually operationalize them and actualize them. And I think that again, is where some of my strong suit. I've worked with a variety of nonprofits, private sectors, and government agencies, and be able to actually move things forward, get things built, get programs in place, and actually see results that are both measurable, and you can actually see their effect in the community.
Yeah. Okay. So I kind of look at your question really at a couple different parts that are related, but they're very different questions. So the question of like attracting people to Jefferson County is a little bit different than the specifics about keeping the boatyard going. When you look at really, you know, you've already done it, there's so many studies out there as to how you attract people to an area. You basically have to break down barriers and you have to make it attractive for them to go here. Why did I come out here? Because there's a perceived opportunity where I could get a job, make more money to put myself through school. Why did you come out here? And once you get here, you pretty much are going to fall in love with the area. I don't know how you could not like it. I've been all over the world, and this is hands down one of my favorite place to be. My wife will only come to Port Townsend. It's the only job I'm applying for in the public sector, for sure, or even looked at and considered. So this is obviously a great place to live and work. I mean, you all know that. And if you've been here and you're raised here, you know, you stay here for a reason. And other people come and visit it. But you have to create incentives for people, and you have to break down every little barrier that stands in their way to relocating. Schools, as Sam mentioned, that's probably one of the biggest things for a lot of families, right? I moved to Bainbridge because I lived in Tracyton, and then I lived in Paulsbo. And then I moved to Bainbridge, and I moved there because of the schools. I love Paulsbo, and I love Tracyton. They were great places, too. But I knew that I couldn't afford to send my kid to private school. I don't want to send my kid to a private schools, and they didn't go to private schools. They were raised there, and the schools were unbelievable. There were services available. When you talk to people, they're looking to move out here. You know, you have a really nice town. It's a great place. It's unbelievable. I mean, drive around. It's just a gorgeous place to live. It's got great weather. It's got really not everything. So we need to promote it. The reality is you have to go out and get that. You have to somehow get in front of people that are looking for a home, and you're going to have to partner with other people where they don't want to live in Seattle, but they want to be co-located up in this area. So you have to have the infrastructure, you know, bringing in the fiber optic, or like if Google does broadband, wireless, all of these things, which, you know, are for next generations, we have to really be forward thinking and look at what they want, and then you have to provide that. So I think that this place has a lot of that, and then you just have to figure out what it takes, and we all have to come together, where it's the city, the county, and the port together. The port alone is not going to do any all of this, since all of you actually got to be engaged. The boatyard permit. It's going to be here, but we're just going to have to bite the bullet. You're going to have to put in a stormwater system. It's going to be, there's only one way that I know of between the Port of Anacortes and Port of Tacoma where they've gotten a clean bill of health from the Department of Ecology. They put in retention ponds, then they let it settle out, they pump the water over to the municipality, they process the water, and then they clean the ponds or the retention ponds or the Baker tanks. It's the same everywhere. That's the only way that I have seen it. You have to control all of the source point for everything coming out of the port. There's no half measure. I've looked at every port authority. When we meet, we talk about it every frickin' meeting. Everybody goes through every different scenario. They set a standard that nobody could meet, in effect, or very difficult to meet. And then everybody's trying different methodologies, and there isn't a methodology that works other than that. That's the only one I've heard of. So if you want to be here and you want to lay that to rest, then that's basically part of where we're going to have to go. Thank you.
Okay, I get to go after you, dude. Right. We are just going question, and then second question. Okay, perfect. So my name is Teresa Varis. I'm the executive director of the Jefferson County Chamber of Commerce. And I stress Jefferson County because we're not just Port Townsend. We're the entire county. We have a lot of focus on East Jefferson, but we go all the way out to the coast. Mm-hmm. So as you know, your responsibility is not only the Port of Port Townsend, but it's the entire Port District. I think that is just really important. But there are a lot of vested interests in your port communities, and I want to know what your thoughts are around community relations, and how will you personally engage the community and your partners if you are indeed chosen?
Yes, indeed. The Port District extends to the entire breadth of Jefferson County, and I have experience working throughout Jefferson County. I got to work on the Ho River project, as Josh did as well, trying to protect the upper Ho Road, worked with designing bank stabilization projects there, and with that I worked not only with Jefferson County Public Works, but also with the parks.
Can you speak up just a little bit?
Yes. Exactly. So I worked on the Upper Ho Road out on the West End, and worked with National Park Services, many of the tribes out there, and I've also worked on with NOAA and the Marine Sanctuary and developing a marine debris program and beach cleanup program. That is actually one of the things that I brought together NOAA, state parks. Various cities, various tribes out there participated and really helped them they were kind of really at loggerheads on something. They were trying to accomplish something really great together and just got into some logistical challenges. And I was able to bring them together, turn their focus towards their common interests, and actually really expand their mission from a one-day event into a program that is focused on ocean health and coastal health. So it's an example of I have quite a bit of facilitation and bringing together of multi-stakeholder groups to be able to help them find their common ground and their common purpose. I've also worked in South County. I worked in fact with Quilcene. I wrote the application for the public infrastructure grant to develop a new intake and filtering system for Coast Seafood. Coast Seafood is, as you know, one of the largest employers in South County. And so worked with them. So I was working on a salmon restoration project. They had concerns about that. And it's one of my kind of operating standards is that if your partner has a problem, you have a problem. And you should help your partner solve their problems as much as you solve your own problems. And it's that kind of teamwork that I would bring. And I have experience in bringing together really very different and diverse groups of groups and agencies and interest holders, and to help them focus on the path forward and what is the things we have in common and not just the things that we disagree about. So I'm a trained facilitator. I'm a member of the International Association of Public Participation, and that has taught me both rigor and methodology and how do you constructively engage the public. So I think that the services I provided is to help agencies move beyond thinking of public process as just having a meeting, because that's not really very effective. I've helped agencies and stakeholders to develop surveys, use data to really move things forward so that we can find this common interest. Thank you.
So fundamentally, I don't know all of you. You all know one another. And I think I'm going to have to establish trust and mutual understanding. I'm going to have to understand what motivates you. We all have to understand what motivates all the different stakeholders and what their interests are. And then we have to actually acknowledge that and see what we can do. Sometimes you go forward and you don't get anything out of it, but you just do it because it's the right thing. You don't stand in the way of something. You do it because they need something, and you just by standing in the way, you can kill the deal. And usually what you'll see is a lot of times it's very, very difficult within government agencies to get things to move forward. So for instance, I was charged to redevelop or develop a whole maritime industrial center over at Terminal 91. It was largely vacant. We had lost about $10 million in revenue, and it was sitting vacant, it was aged, and we were rebuilding the piers, so we went out for a tax, and we got the funding from the port, and we went for bond issue. So they were starting to rebuild the piers, and then basically we had to go through a whole master planning exercise with all the stakeholders, and we incorporated their needs and understanding into everything we did. Fundamentally, you have to be forthright, and that goes all the way through, and sooner or later you're going to get caught, and that just eliminates trust so quickly, and then you got a big problem. So, and you got a problem forever. It's not just like a one-off deal. So when we developed that, we went through, we had to put in utility corridor. We didn't have the capacity, so when we did the master plan, we looked at it, and I said, well, we don't even have close to the capacity that we need in order to develop anything. So what we did was we scaled it all out. We hired MBBJ. They came in. We went through all the assumptions with all the different stakeholder groups, and we had all the exact same stakeholder groups, all the same people as all of you in this room. You know, you think about this, you know, we don't talk about it necessarily conceptually like a stakeholder group. You know, it's Bardo, or it's Gordon, or it's Bill, or whomever, right? You're here and you're representing that. I think you guys already honestly developed such a great roadmap with a strategic plan. I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel. I think we just need to update a little bit. You've got some changes in there. You have to look at what's already been done. You need to prioritize those things and say this is what's really important going forward. But it is a good guiding document, and I think that it's been in effect for 5 years now. It needs to be updated. I also think that when you're just going out and you're establishing, I don't come with really any baggage other than it might be perceived as being, you know, Seattle. But the reality is we brought together a lot of people. All the deals that I put together are still in effect 13 years later at the port. So they've stood the test of time. They've made money for everybody. And we brought forward a lot of different initiatives. And it's really an eclectic group. I think here, you know, it's really key to go and understand all the stakeholders, and I'd have to go and, you know, I have a lot of wood to chop. You know, I don't have a relationship with everybody here. So I think that will be something that I'm going to have to really work at, but I think really it comes down to a little bit a personal relationship with all the different stakeholder groups. understanding what you're needing. When we can, we'll incorporate it, and when we can support one another or there's redundancy, I'll defer to the Chamber of Commerce if they've already got an initiative going or whatever it may be, or we'll just support it. And we won't just support it passively by not fighting it. We'll actually actively support things going forward. And I think you just have to have a really comprehensive plan for the whole county. I think that's what's key. Integrate everything so we're all understand what the goals are going forward. Thank you.
Comprehensive plan for the whole county. That's what I worked on when I first got that job with Jefferson County. So I've worked for the entire county before, and that includes the city of Port Townsend. My first long-range planning assignment was to work on the Brandon Sub-Area Plan, so I got to know that community very well, including folks that have very disparate perspectives about how that community should grow. And of course, being the government person, you're in the middle of that, and that was a challenge. And those issues are still being debated, but at least we made progress by adopting that plan, and now the details are being worked out in terms of the Black Point development proposal. I've also worked with Quilcene, as I mentioned before, with the Complete Streets project. I've worked on the West End. That West End project for Upper Hill Road, it was a challenge because basically counties in the West, timber counties, used to get a lot of money that would represent about a quarter of the road fund, the operating budget for the road fund. That money went away. It was a kind of sort of a fight every year to maintain some of that money, but basically it was zeroed out. And Jefferson County was telling the other stakeholders, look, you know, the road washes out and we don't have the ability to fix it in the way it really should be fixed or to proactively protect that roadway. And this is jeopardizing, you know, vehicular access to a World Heritage Site, to an international biosphere reserve at the Upper Hill Rainforest. And the National Park was saying, hey, we don't have the money either, and you know, that's your road. We're like, well, 12 miles of it are our road, but then the next 6 is yours. And if you didn't have the 12 miles or even 1 point went out, then you're not going to get anybody out there. So. You know, we hired a government relations firm to help us bring in congressional attention, including then Congressman Dix. The community was obviously very concerned. The city of Forks was concerned. The Ho Tribe was concerned. The Ho Trust was concerned. In any case, we put together that coalition and eventually got everybody on board to support a project that would both be environmentally friendly and effective. In a proactive way to protect that roadway and protect access for everybody. Again, an important economic development driver. So being the lead staff to the Planning Commission and then working on transportation issues for the entire county, I mean, that is my field in a sense. Now working for the state, and our territory includes Clallam County, Jefferson County, Whidbey Island, North Kitsap County, including Bainbridge Island, plus aquaculture throughout Puget Sound. So that's an even larger playing field where we have to, of course, consider all the benefits that we're managing for, which includes revenue, but also includes, first and foremost, environmental protection, but also ways to utilize those natural resources responsibly. In terms of working together here, another success story. Okay, so Greg mentioned baggage. And I suppose I have to go ahead and admit that there's a chance that I have a small carry-on style baggage that from working in that environment. Only because, again, when you work for the government and you have 100 people showing up to a Planning Commission meeting, they perhaps see you as the problem. You know, they're frustrated, and you're the guy up there trying to talk, fielding the questions. And so we worked on. Agricultural issues specifically solved this problem where we had, you know, environmentally sensitive area protections versus economic opportunities. We worked together with a wide variety of interest groups. We were well ahead of the curve in terms of the state. Later, the Ruckels House Center got involved in trying to come up with a voluntary stewardship program to solve that conundrum. We were already well ahead. We adopted regulations for accessory uses to agriculture, providing economic opportunities within the confines of the Growth Management Act, as well as try to find a compromise position that would help farmers continue their operations and grow without running amok in terms of a stray of environmental regs. Thanks.
Thank you, Josh. Bill, before you go, I just wanted to check, can people in the back hear well enough? Are people talking loud enough for everybody? Yes, okay. No?
Yep. I'd have to close the door sometime.
Okay. Maybe that door? Okay. All right.
While the park commissioners set the financial direction for the port. The executive director and the port staff do the research and bring options forward for the commission. I see ahead of us some pretty rocky financial times. In your previous experience, what's been the most effective way to set a positive financial course and maintain viability for the port? Some of the solutions that have come up in port commission meetings, reduction of staff and the consequent reduction in services to tenants, sale of underperforming assets, reduction in marketing costs and support for community events like the Wooden Boat Festival or going to boat shows and that sort of thing, privatization of the port operations, increasing user costs to cover the cost of the port's operation, and aggressive development of port assets that are currently underutilized. If you take those items and prioritize them, what do you feel in your past experience has proven to be the best to least best option?
Did you give him the list, Bill?
Greg wrote it down.
I did. I'll leave it here. They can look at my notes all day. Okay, so, you know, almost every government agency finds themselves in this situation because fundamentally government agencies, first, it's not supposed to be like for profit, right? And you get all these changes, whether you have Tim Eyman's initiatives, all of a sudden funding gets pulled out from under you where you were counting on it. You're counting on sales tax revenue. You're counting on hopefully the demographic growing here within the county so that you bring in additional revenue. All of these changes are going to require compromises on the part of everybody here in some manner or another. And or you can also get everyone in this room is going to have to champion going forward in a positive manner. That's really what I think you need to be thinking about. So when we looked, basically they hired me to generate revenue in part, right, at the Port of Seattle. They were down $10 million out of $100 million, and they created a business development group, and that's what I was recruited into. And so what you have to do is you have to look at your asset base. I'm not going to necessarily say that we need to cut and do all these different things. Frankly, that's not going to get you here. From A to Z, much less from A to B, it's not going to get you there. You only have $6 million. You have a $16.5 million capital repair and replacement plan, right? So you need to start generating, moving towards a $5 million a year net operating income, additional, above and beyond. So what you got to do is take the asset base that we have. You have to define what all the opportunities are for capacity, and that includes people. I can guarantee you, you start cutting people, you're not going to get the work done. You only have 26 people working in the port, or whatever, 27. I don't know the exact number. It's not 300. It's not 1,700. So the reality is what you need to do is get as much value out of those people as you can. And in some cases, you actually have to spend money to make money. So if I spend $100,000 and I make $500,000 and $400,000 of it is net operating income, that's a good investment to me, right? And I think that's what you got to look at. So you start off with the asset base, you assess that, you look at your people and what you have or don't have in terms of capability, and maybe what you have or don't have in the community, right? You don't necessarily have to have them as an employee. All the people here have contributed in a big way to the port. So I think you look at your human assets, you look at your hard assets, and then you have to come up with a business plan that goes out after the business, to bring in the business. Again, I'm not going to say like sale of assets. At some point, there is, we talked about sailing. So it's such a general term. We might retain the land, but we might sell a facility over to, let's say, a tenant and let them take over the maintenance and repair or whatnot. Okay, that could be a great thing. I'm not a big proponent of selling land or assets. That's not why the Port Authority was created. That's not why port authorities exist. It's actually just the opposite, so that we create and generate and make sure we have access in perpetuity. So we really have to look for four generations. So I think the business plan that we come up with, you know, we'll have to come together, will have to be focused really on how you generate revenue, how you market Port Townsend and the county itself.
So in my previous work, I did learn a lot about how to communicate information, including information that might be hard to hear or is disappointing. And so in this case, we have some stark realities, but so does every local government, probably every port district out there, in terms of infrastructure that was built from 1930 to 1950, and now we're facing with repair and replacement needs that outweigh what our current revenue structure is. So these are tough choices, and you have to prioritize. The draft plan does come up with an attempt to try to prioritize things. Obviously, that's a public process, and everybody should be contributing ideas. But there are some realities that you just have to face, and we just have to take it one step at a time. As I mentioned before, retaining what we currently have, very important, including that immediate boatyard permit, the number one capital project being the Point Hudson Breakwater, et cetera. Beyond that, though, then what could we do with the assets? I mean, I'm not going to reiterate everything Greg said. Of course, that was a wise statement, all the types of things that you try to do. I will add one piece to it, though, which is that we have some assets right now that we aren't fully utilizing. And principally, it's the area that we have around the airport. So there's the airport plan that was updated recently. And of course, you have airport-related uses right directly surrounding that airport, which is regulated by the FAA. But the port also owns property surrounding that, which could be airport-compatible uses, but it could be something else. And there's lots of tools in the toolbox for the port to do something there. Of course, there might be reluctance from other partners. The city might say, well, why are you doing industrial development there when you should be doing it in the city? Well, those are hard conversations, but again, we're trying to serve everybody in Jefferson County. And if we could do it in a way that everybody's on board with, we're all helping each other, then it's possible to do some industrial development, infrastructure development at the airport, which could bring in new, clean, green, eco-industrial uses there to, again, expand our opportunities to have creative business enterprise happening in Jefferson County. I think the port can play a major role, and that's an asset that's underutilized.
So I'm a member of the American Society of Civil Engineers, and this is the organization that gives this nation a D- in infrastructure investment. And so this is an issue that is facing that not only the port, but the entire nation, and particularly small rural communities are facing. And it is going to take a multi-pronged approach on that. I've been a business owner here in this county. My husband owned a retail business for over 15 years in downtown Port Townsend. I've worked throughout the county. And when you sign your name, have to sign your name to the front of the paycheck on a regular basis. You know that cash flow and that kind of long-term planning has real consequences. And so I take that into the leadership that I provide for public agencies and private companies that I've worked with. I think it is about growing revenue, but I think it's about growing revenue really invested in that triple bottom line. That's a value that the port has adopted. It's a value that I think aligns with the community. And so I don't think that it is about just going out and trying to attract whatever we can get to move here. I think it is about really building the environment and the infrastructure that is conducive to that. To be able to do that, I think you need to be able to work at multiple scales. I think you need to be able to work with the maintenance manager here and go, okay, how are we really going to solve this particular issue for this month to get this piece this piece of infrastructure to last us a little bit longer? And I think you also need to be working with our congressional delegation to look at what is the long term. This country needs to invest in its infrastructure. There is no way around it. Civilizations have fallen because we don't invest in our infrastructure. And I think the port has a voice in that, and I think that we need to really be working and enunciating that and making sure that we're getting the type of public investment that can really support the private sector. I think it takes creativity, and it also takes that real knowledge of, like, how do things actually work out here in the peninsula? How do, you know, I was talking with Larry about how much the airport runway reconstruction is going to cost, and the first thing I said was, where are you going to get the rock for that? You know, how are you going to meet FAA specs on that? Because I've tried to find rock that meets FAA spec. And we talked about the different options. But it's that constant looking for the cost value, as well as then building the capacity of not just your organization, but the capacity of the community as a whole, and then working up and down the scale to address the issue.
Okay, I'm Gordon Nielsen, rigger by trade, one of the people that helped bring the PTMTA up online. That's the Port Townsend. I don't have much voice. It's just all that's left. So at any rate, if you didn't hear that, that's okay. I'll get to the question. Predictability and stability are crucial to businesses here in the port. If you walk through the port, you're going to find most of them are all hunkered down doing the work that they're known for. And they're known throughout the world, not just up and down the coast, but we have people who are known internationally for their skill and their craftsmanship. The DOE regulatory environment brings a lot of uncertainty. The work permit. Describe how you, as a port director, will keep those business owners informed and involved in implementing solutions. They're not going to come to you and say, by the way, what's going on? Tell me. You have to come up with some way that they are constantly informed so they can make good business decisions. Do I hire 6 more painters? Do I take on this job? Or is the work permit going to go away? You know, these are things that saw on the families that we have in this community. So tell us how you, as a port director, will communicate to those business owners in this port and up at the airport as well.
Josh.
Thank you, Gordon, for the question. So obviously there are public meetings that happen in this space, and the public is invited, and certainly I've been to those meetings and seen people come here and make statements and listen. But that's not enough. That's not the only way, of course, to communicate with folks. I attended a presentation from the environmental compliance officer about the boatyard permit specifically. It was at the Shipwrights Co-op. I thought it was a great presentation, and there was a good chance for back and forth. So I think continuing those kinds of outreach opportunities are important. Also, just one-on-one individual consultation. I mean, the port director should be walking around the shipyard, walking around the boatyard, talking to everybody, going out to the airport, going to our other assets, and having that individual communication. There's also a variety of other ways to get the public involved and informed. We have a fantastic radio station, for example, so the port director could easily have more exposure and on the radio station. That's another way to get other people knowledgeable. We have the two papers the daily and the weekly, so I think there should be more communication made that way as well. But I think that you're absolutely right that those folks deserve to be informed and deserve to also participate to help make that decision, because as has been explained, these aren't going to be easy choices to make, and they will involve investment. I mean, is there possible just to get rid of that marine outfall and do an upland stormwater management? Those seem to be where we're heading, and that's going to require quite a bit of investment. And there are other jurisdictions that are out there looking for state and federal assistance for that very same reason. So there's going to be competition out there. And so I've been part of efforts where we knew that there was competition for funds, for scarce funds. And when you can build a coalition, you can make that case and you can involve people and paint a clear picture and show that there is significant support for a certain activity, which includes a certain amount of sacrifice on the part of both the people that would directly benefit, but also the overall community as a whole, then you're going to be successful in those kinds of outreach. So I think involving everybody and keeping them informed is essential.
I think one of the roles of the port director is really to think a lot and to actualize how do you actually communicate with the variety of stakeholders, including the people that you mentioned. And this is something that I have quite a bit of experience about. And again, I mentioned that it's not just about having meetings. And we know that. We have data that show that. And we have a lot of different ways that we can reach people and we can hear their concerns and we can actually transform that into data that can help inform our decision making. Some of it is, I call it management by walking around. It's not a term I came up with, it's a one that I use, but being visible, it's what I did yesterday. I spent a good amount of the afternoon walking around, talking to different business owners, and just listening to them, the challenges they're facing. You know, and one of them is, you know, there's a lot of people that are ready to retire, and they're going, okay, so where is this industry going next? There are also some young people coming in, and that's fantastic. And how do we communicate with them? You know, and it's going to be different. There are going to be some people that will never come to a meeting. There will be people that, and you can develop tools that you can actually have people bring you their concerns in a way that suits them. There are going to be people that will never stand up in a public meeting and give you their opinion, but they will fill out a survey. They will write an email. They will use other, what we call in the communication world, modalities of how you communicate. And I think that is very important to be able to put the rigor and methodology to that so that you can actually get an understanding of what the full breadth of people are experiencing. And I talk a lot about in communication about data. And data in the communication world comes in a different way. It's not just numerical data, but there is a methodology and a rigor that you can bring to that so that you can really start to see trends and you can start to see common themes in that. And that includes, you know, looking at it as a group, but then also having those one-on-ones and being a presence in the community that you're serving and being seen as approachable and somebody that's going to take in what people are saying. It's what I tell my staff all the time, is that everybody will get their say. Not everybody will get their way. It's just, you know, it's a fact of life. It's a compromise. But I believe really what most people are wanting is the opportunity to have their say. And if you can do that and you can provide data to the decision makers, then they can really make the informed choices. And it's that experience that I bring of really being able to synthesize data from a lot of different sources and be able to find a pathway forward. Thanks.
So in my background, basically what we did, there's formal communication, then there's informal communication. So we'll have like a formal communication plan, which will include like posting all these meeting notes on the website. So you have all these different tools in terms of how you can convey information. A lot of times it comes down to the individual stakeholders and, you know, the individual people. How do they want the information? You can have to ask them that. Some people say, I don't have access to a computer even. I'm not interested in it. I know people don't even have a mailbox. You have to go drop it off at the boat. So you have to understand, if you really want to reach out to all these different types of people, how you're going to effectively do that. As far as communicating about the business end of it, so what we did was we created a bunch of different tools that just seemed really meaningful to them. So for instance, we had a berthing plan, which would then look out at all the vessels that are coming in over months ahead. And you could see that it was all transparent. It would give ETAs, ETDs, a vessel name. But you have to communicate the information that is relevant to that those different stakeholders. So you have to kind of tailor that. Now it takes a fair amount of work and effort, but we didn't have a lot of resources, so basically we had to, you know, condense some of it. But you should be able to have it where they can go into, whether it be the website or whether it be actively, and then you can figure that out. So all the suppliers, you know, they got on our listserv, and if they had email, they would get that information. It was real time. It was daily. We just sent it out at the end of the day, and we just updated it. Everybody knew how to do it. It was really simple. It wasn't super complex. But when you talk about some of these other really big threats that you're talking about, that's going to be something that's going to be, have to be on a systematic basis, whether it be a monthly or quarterly, where you look at these threats, like the boatyard permit, what's the status of that? Hopefully you can commit at any time you see sort of an updated status as to that, to know whether or not you're going to be compromised. But some of those things are difficult because we're at the whim of some other regulatory agency, for instance. So when the port knows, that's when all of you are going to know to some extent. But well, at least you'll get updates and you'll have something pretty. But it's really important. Most people expect us to actively be out there, but there is a limit on what you can really address with your resources. But there are tools that we have, and I've developed them, and they went over really well. And I think that's one of the things for some of the people on the boatyard, the trades, that's what they should be looking at. And that'll be part of the business plan. It'll be actually proactive looking ahead for generating business, so they'll know if there's a slow time, for instance.
Hi, I'm Linda Herzog, and most people recognize that I come from South County and always speak to South County.
It's the
accent. It's also a really, really big disadvantage to coming last in a group of five people who really know what the good questions are. So I'm down to my question number six now. This room is not representative of the general Jefferson County population. In my experience, very, very few people in the population really understand the broad scope of roles and responsibilities for the port. And would you let us know how much importance you give to that issue and how you might address it as executive director?
I know.
I think you're right, Linda. I think that actually very few people understand what local government does in general. And I think that that is one of the challenges ahead of us, is to really be in contact with our constituency and to let them know the value that we are providing. Again, as a civil engineer, I go, if you drove here today, you can thank your local government. If you, you know, picked up your phone, you can in large part thank the local government. You know, and it's that creating that knowledge of what we at the services we actually provide. I think that also, and this is a bit of a tricky one because I think the needs from our very diverse county, they vary, and we do have to keep a focus on the assets that we have. We do have assets in South County, but we do have, but there does tend to be a focus on Port Townsend and the assets that we have here. And there's a kind of a gravitational pull that happens. And that's understandable, but I think it's that the port director is called to then turn to the other parts of the county where the assets are, and then also to be looking forward and say, how can a port district focus on economic development that looks different than what we have right now? And I think that I want to be very careful, because I don't think you can take your eye off the ball, which is where your main operations are, where the main bulk of your revenue and your services are. But I think while you do that, you have to look to the horizon, and you have to look, where are we going to be 75 years from now, and what do we need to be investing in then? And particularly, then you can look out to the rest of the county. I look to other port jurisdictions, particularly the smaller ones and the ones that have been successful, like the Port of Walla Walla, which has invested in things like partnering to renovate the Whitman Hotel. It's not a marine asset. They've partnered with the Center for Viticulture and Enology, and were a key player in really transforming the economy of that area. I look to the Port of Columbia that has built the Blue Mountain Station, which has provided space for value add for agriculture. Again, not marine related at all. And so while we absolutely need to keep our eye on the ball, and we can't lose sight of the immediate needs that we have in front of us, we also have to operate at that different scale, and to be thinking down the road, and to be thinking out of where that kind of gravitational pull is right now to where the other parts of our county and our constituency are, and how do we serve them.
So fundamentally, you kind of have you have the three districts, and they all basically have kind of an equal representation in terms of population that they represent. So you have the political representation fundamentally. I think the mindset of everybody in the room, we have to think of us as one. First of all, you know, you run around and everybody has kind of their agenda. I understand that, but the Port Authority is fundamentally a county-based government. So I think it's obvious that we serve everyone. We have to reach out to everyone within those districts. You know, there's formal ways that you can reach out. You can have meetings that are in those districts, so it's easier for those people to attend the meetings, for instance. But then there's also this aspect of generating revenue, where the business is, and it is focused from Port Townsend, kind of moving out to some extent in the airport. However, I think there is going to be a lot of opportunity, but we're going to have to identify those. They have to kind of be formally acknowledged, and they have to be kind of written into the roadmap, whether it be the strategic plan, the operational plan, the capital plan. I mean, you have to follow a plan, and then that planning process, everybody should be engaged in that from every district, from every part of the county, and should have a say in that. And I think that's, through that process, you can just have that embedded into the whole thing. You know, as far as, when people get, I know there's not enough money basically around, and people worry that, hey, we're not spending any money, let's say in Quilcene or wherever it may be, and they feel like they're being treated as second-class citizens, for instance. Again, if you really want to be able to cure some of these ills where we're not fighting over a dollar, which is what it sometimes degrades into, is the dialogue, we need to basically raise the title level and raise the revenue, and that's, I think that will be a big cure, but we got to come together. You just, there's no other way around it. I mean, people have to come together, we're in. So I think that we'll set specific business goals. I'm kind of on the pointy end of economic development. I understand incentives, we can create all those incentives. The county's got to be on the same page, as well as the city, as well as us, as well as all the other towns and key leaders in all the towns and going all the way out to the coast, and every stakeholder group. That strategic plan, it had 36 people that were representative. You know, it's got to be refreshed, and now we're going to have some other minds that are going to be engaged in that, I assume, going forward, because it needs to be updated. So I think that's going to be the great vehicle for you to be more readily engaged, make sure that you have the representation and your voice is heard. I don't think a $58,000 investment in Quilcene is going to really make a huge difference, frankly. We're talking literally we need millions. So I think you have to really frame the question correctly and be looking out ahead as to how we're really going to get this accomplished all the way around for everybody. And if the port can help the city, why not have a retention pond or a stormwater system that actually helps increase their capacity or other adjacent properties that maybe not are port owned, for instance. So you just have to think beyond yourself and what our immediate needs are. And look, and I agree, we got to look 50 or 100 years down the road. So.
So as been mentioned before, it's important to market what the Port of Port Townsend and this community offers to outside folks, folks that want to come in and visit and spend money, bring their boats to have work done, and maybe even move, a different style of marketing, but maybe even move here and raise their families. But in a sense, we also need to market internally so that people understand what the port's all about, what are the opportunities, what are the constraints. So that's another effort, sort of an inward-facing educational outreach effort that is important. So again, having worked for Jefferson County, I've had to and had the opportunity to work with essentially all the areas that are represented by the Port of Port Townsend. And it is true that the major assets, the main assets that the port holds, are focused here and down the streets and at the airport. But there are other assets throughout, and those assets are important as well. I know in Quilcene, for example, there's work that needs to be done to maximize the holdings down on Linger Longer Road, and we have a great tenant there in Coast Seafoods, and we have the marina and the Beck Marina, and we also have, of course, the Warm Water Swimming Beach there. So those are important assets, but there's other property there. What could happen that would provide jobs possibly for the Quilcene community, some kind of partnership? The port's offered to sponsor a feasibility study for a wastewater treatment community system in Quilcene. I think that's a good role for the port to step in and step up to the plate and do that, because the money was there and no one else wanted to do it, is my understanding. So the port said, yeah, let's do that. That's important. It may or may not pan out in terms of the feasibility of that actual construction. We have other sewer planning going on, such as in the Tri-area. Can the port play a role there? Again, with the overall mission of creating jobs. And, you know, the Tri-Area obviously is our urban growth area that we're planning for beyond Port Townsend. So that's a wonderful opportunity. There is a connection in terms of proximity to the airport, as well as, and I mentioned before that, you know, the port could do a community system possibly at the airport that would support eco industrial development there at the airport. So, and there are other assets throughout, and we haven't even talked about the West End and what could possibly happen there. But I concur with my esteemed colleagues that it does take a long-range view, and it's something that needs to happen concurrently as the strategic plan and the comprehensive scheme are updated, perhaps a centennial scheme in celebration of 2024. Then, while that's happening, we're also trying to fix the more immediate problems that we all talked about, and again, with the eye on maintaining our access to the water for the community and the air and providing jobs. Thanks.
I think this is a good time to take a quick break.
Okay.